just a quick and special welcome to Dina Icon, who is a childhood for me. I spend many, 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 many Shabbos afternoons in the Khan, the Khan house, and it's a very, very special privilege to be giving share in front of a family friend, a very close family friend. Let's learn. So here we go. Let's just recap as there might be a few more people walking in. Just to see where we are, we're essentially in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof, in the middle of the Perek, but if you've not been here last week, that's fine too. What the focus is of this evening is one simple analysis, and that is that Yonatan and David have a means of communication they've set up. What is the aim of this whole experience? Is they want to know, is Shaul HaMelech really, really against David? Or is it only when the cloud comes over him, when the Ruach Ra, you know, falls over him, that he has this experience? Meaning to say, is it intrinsic to his character, or is it extrinsic? And therefore maybe it's avoidable. That's the question they have. And they've set up this whole system, and now they're going to work out how they're going to communicate the response of their experiment to each other. So here's how it goes. What we're going to do is we're going to do the few psukim together, like in groups, and then we're going to just swing around to some of the Mephoreshim, consider some of the really essential issues. So we're going to start off on Pasuk Yod Ches, and the plan for tonight is to go to read these in a couple groups until we get towards the end of the parak. We're going to go in the first group is Yod Ches to Chof Gimel. This is the first set of the narrative. So Yonatan is now setting up how they're going to communicate their message to one another. Here's how we go. Yonatan says, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, which is why this section in Tanakh is read. This is Perek Chof, Pasuk Yod Ches. This is the reason why this narrative is read on Erev Rosh Chodesh, like we read last Shabbos and a bit ago. Okay? V'nifkarto ki pokeid moshavecha. And look, you're going to be absent. You're going to be AWOL from your seat. It's going to be clearly obvious that you're missing, David. V'shilashto tereid ma'od. And you'll go three times deep into the field. Uvasa l'makom asher nistarto shom b'yom ha'ma'aseh. And you will hide, or like on the day of the action, v'yoshavta eitzel Evan or Ezel, and you're going to sit by this place marker. There's like the stone which everybody used to like gather by. You know, the Evan or Ezel was kind of like this rock that people would say, oh, when you hit that rock, you turn left, or let's have picnic at that rock. So it's a very distinct rock. So he says, you're going to hide by that distinct rock. V'anish loshes achitzim tzidora, I'm going to shoot three arrows towards that rock, l'shalach li l'matara, and I'll pretend that I'm using that rock as the general target for it. V'hinei eshlach es hanar leich umetza es achitzim. Then I'll send my, you know, in those, it's the equivalent of like, you know, a golf caddy, right? You know what I'm saying? So there's not the balls, it's the arrows, but we get the same idea. So he's going to go find them for him. So he sends off the young guy. He says, omar lanar hinei achitzim imcha v'heno. If I scream to him and I say, Sonny, the arrows are within where you are, where you're standing. They're between us. Then kochenu vavo'o ki shalom lecha. Then you can come out of your hiding place and pick up the arrows and come. Ve'ein davar chai Hashem. And by the life of Hashem, meaning to say he's taking a shavua, that then you're fine, David. Ve'im ko omar lo elem. But if I should shout to this young man, hinei achitzim mimcha v'hala, I don't think you're far enough. Go a little further to find the arrows. Then kirshilachcha Hashem, then Hashem has sent you. Va'davor ashedibarnu ani v'ato, hinei Hashem beini uveinecho ad olam. And then you know, then we actually know what it means. It means that Shaul has turned his back on you, and you're going to have to go and remember the covenant forever, because David and Yonatan made this covenant. This is what we have over here. So there you go, Jesse. It's the exodus for tonight. So here we go. Interesting means of communication, if you think about it. You're like, wouldn't a simple text be all right? Now, of course, we don't have texts, but there are other ways of communicating messages. So Yonatan now has worked out what Shaul has in his mind. So Yonatan, be direct, be transparent. Go up to David and speak to him. Right, why can't he do that? Why can't he? What's stopping Yonatan at this point? What was that?
He's the king's son.
Okay, so on a very practical level, just without even digging into the Mephoreshim yet, as Autumn is pointing out, it makes a lot of sense that if Shaul has declared David a ben mavis, a person who's liable for death, that means to say when you see David's picture on the road, it is with a large 10,000 above it, in red. Right, so now, if the king's son is going to be talking to the person in that picture, that's not good for Yonatan. So Yonatan can't communicate with him in an overt way. So maybe this is the, maybe this is on a, just a practical level, a way of communicating the message that that it's dangerous. But we'd like to think there's more than that, right? I mean, to say, of course, it is practical and alternates on the, completely the same wavelength as you. But there might be more as well here, Leah.
I mean, but at the end, they do meet. That's what I never understood.
Right, I always always on about that.
He has this whole thing going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, so clearly, that's what always bothers me, is if it's only practical, then they could have made a covert meeting place without the you know, the golf caddy in the first place, right? So why
to be there, but
right, or somehow caddy, right. So there's obviously something else happening over here. So that's what that we need to deal with. And the Mefarshim also struggle with this. So one of the things that the Radak says, we're not going to do so many, as many of the Mefarshim inside today, just because of want to make sure we also cover ground. What the Radak says is he says a really interesting thing. He says, why is it that he had to go out into the field anyway? You know, like meaning why this field, why here, why now? So if we actually reverse, I don't know if we remember this, but like if we reverse a little while back, Yonatan had previously taken out Shaul and said to his father, Dad, he says, why are you trying to kill him? You know you love him. He's a good boy. He's married to your daughter. Why are you doing this? And Shaul said, you know, but I'll take a shvun that he won't die. Where did that happen? So Tanakh told us about a perek or two ago that happened in a field. So what Yonatan's symbolically doing is he's pulling him out to the same field where Shaul made that shavua to David of a shavua of protection, and now the communication about David's ultimate fate is going to be in the same field. Isn't that interesting? He's using the place maybe either as a conductor for that, maybe as a symbol of what could have, should have been. That might have been also, so it's not just that it's for lack of a better place, there's actually a very particular resonance in this field, but it goes further than that. So, interestingly enough, why he says I'm going to shoot three arrows? Where do we have threes in the story? Where else are there threes in the story? Any other familiar?
He stayed 3 days.
Okay, so we're going to see that the feast is going to be a 3-day feast. Wow, fantastic, right? So the feast is a 3-day feast. David HaMelech is missing 3 days, and that makes sense, by the way, because let's say David is missing the first day. That's a cold, right? The second day, not sure. But the third day, there's no excuses. We're going to see that's going to be what's going to happen, right? So there's the 3 days. In a certain sense, he's shooting three arrows, almost like I've tried three times, right? I've tried, and we've soundly tested this experiment. And that's sort of like he's communicating. It's almost like the communication is not verbal, but kinetic communication. It's through these arrows, right? Karen?
So I just want to ask you, when you are told that you have to ask forgiveness, how many times does it?
Great question. You also saw three times as well. So that might have a thing. Perfect, right? So this might be something about the realm of forgiveness. Are we going to dig down to Shaul's forgiveness or not? That's this is what the Malbim and the Radak really try to search out over here. Like, you know, the symbolism of this. The Malbim says something astonishing, though. And this is something which kind of almost seems petty at first, but then becomes much more sinister when you think about it more. So let's take a look at this. If everybody has the packets, the Mefarshim packets, so unit 6.5, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at this Malbim. By the way, so the Malbim says, well, but before we get there, just one last point before this Malbim is that obviously it makes a lot of sense. What's symbolically the idea of the arrows being, the boy being, you know, the too far or too close? I mean, if you think about this, if the arrows are between the boy and Yonatan, that means
that's safe.
And if the arrows are beyond the boy, that means Nurat. So the symbolism that the Mefarshim says is obvious there in that case is that if it's closer, if you're within, that means you, David, are within. If the arrows are without, then you, David, are without. So there's, you know, that communication is clear. You know, the symbolism is pretty clear on that level. But there's more to it. So this is where the Malbim joins us on source 60. Okay, so the very top of the second page, just for the sake of brevity. The Malbim says the following. Vani shloshes achitzim, these three arrows, Hu melitzo al lashon hara. Why arrows? Because it's referring to lashon hara. Lashon hara literally means, how we translate that exact?
Bad
speech, right? So he's bearing a tale. Right? Shenikra chetz b'ksuvim. Because we know that a bad tongue or a gossip or a rumor is called a chetz. Chitzei giborim shenunim im gachalei reslamim is like an example of what we say on Shabbos. That language can be as piercing, as sharp, and as dangerous as an arrow. And also, if you think about it symbolically, a sword can only affect people within an immediate environment. An arrow, or today, let's say bullets, affect people way around. All it takes is one text and send, And you can destroy a person's life, or shit off prospects, or job prospects, right? And that's all it takes, right? So there's this notion of an arrow. And then he goes on to say the following. V'nikra lishna tilisai shahareg shloisha. And it's called, Lashon Hara is called a threefold communication, because it kills three people, as the Gemara says. Kedivrei Chazal, he quotes the Gemara in Erechin. So the Gemara in Erechin says that there are three people who are badly affected by Lashon Hara. They are, of course, the speaker, the listener, and, of course, the victim, right? The person who's being talked about. So what is ultimately Yonatan doing with these arrows? Why three arrows? Now, according to the Malbim. What's the message is conveying? How, you see, this is why it's strange. You know, it's how is Lashon Hara connected here, right? Somehow Yonatan is communicating to him something about gossip, something about Lashon Hara, and there's three arrows to represent the notion of the threefold victims of Lashon Hara, which are being communicated via this action. So where is Lashon Hara? We're missing this. So here's where it gets a little more sinister. Is if we think about this for a moment, you know, here you have a lot of people. We've expanded the scope of this family. We have Shaul HaMelech. We have Meirav, Michal, Yonatan, three children. Two of those children are deeply connected to David HaMelech, right? Everybody loves David HaMelech, but Shaul himself cannot connect. Shaul HaMelech is vehemently opposed to David. Everything he does, nothing is good, right? So you have to ask yourself, so what's under, like, you know, as we say in the Southern Hemisphere, what's in the bonnet? What's burning? What's bothering him so much? Or maybe we could say, who is bothering him so much? That's another way of asking the same question. Okay, now we know that Shaul HaMelech has had episodes with his Ruach Ra. We know that. But the question we have to ask ourselves is there someone there too? Because it seems too much. It seems too vehement. It seems too angry to be something which is self-sustained. After all, everybody's working on Shaul HaMelech. So this is what the Gemara, the Midrash tells us. Take a look at the source 62. This is the Midrash Yalkut Shimoni. It appears also in the Midrash Rabbah. It also appears in the Midrash Shoichatov. Same idea. We're going to see next when we get to Perek Chof Aleph, a terrible, terrible episode that happens. David HaMelech is going to run away to a city called Ir HaKohanim. He seeks refuge there. Ahimelech is the head of the town. And when David HaMelech flees, the word reaches Shaul that David HaMelech has spent time in the city of Nov, and they consider it a place which is harboring a traitor. And so an advisor to the king, whose name was Doeg HaAdomi, says to the king, traitors need to be killed. And the king says, go for it. And Doeg wipes out the entire city of Nov, Ir HaKohanim. One of the biggest stains in all of Shmuel Aleph on Jewish history, and certainly on Shaul HaMelech's name. There's this fellow called Doeg HaAdomi. Doeg literally means warrior of sorts. And the Midrash says, well, what's going on with this man? Who is he? What's happening? So take a look at this. This is the Midrash in 62. The Midrash says, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Omar, the first line, V'loma nikra shmo Adomi. Why was his name Doeg the Edomite? Right? He was a Jew. He was an Israelite. So why is he called an Edomite? Edomite's a different nation. Right? Those are folks from the east side of the Jordan. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Omar, Al Shem Eroi. No, don't worry, that's just the name of his city. Practical point, right? That's what he lived in a city called Edom for whatever reason. Okay, that's pragmatic. Rabbi Shmuel Omar, Shekinah b'David, Shenikro Admoni. David was in fact described as being red. David was red-haired. David had red temperament. So why was he called Doeg HaAdomi? Because he was jealous of everything David did. He was also probably one of the ministers. He was probably in the cabinet of Shaul HaMelech. And David rose to the top much faster than he did. There was something about David's charisma and leadership which really undermined who he was. Now here's something very sad. This is something just sad to think about in life. Think about all the people we know in life who are defined by who they're not defined by. Think about that. This man's name is who he wishes he was. Think about that. What a terrible life to lead. Who are you? I'm the person I wish I was. That's terrible. He wishes he was David. Doeg, can't you be Doeg? No, Doeg, I want to be HaAdomi. That's what Shmuel's saying. He lived a terrible life of wishing he was somebody else. Right? And that's going to affect everything he does because he wishes he was David. He wishes he could have what David had. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Omar, Shematir Shehitir Nov Idam Nov Ir HaKohanim. Why is he called HaAdomi, the red man? Because he has the blood on his name of Nov, which he's about to massacre next Perek. Rabbi Nechemiah Ben Osher, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar, Shehitir Damo Shel David V'Ishtoi. Why? You know what it was? Is because he was the man who in a certain sense, you know, invalidated the blood of David HaMelech to Shaul. So what you see the Midrash saying, the Midrash goes on to details, where essentially Doeg was the one behind the scenes who said to Shaul HaMelech, David HaMelech is liable for death. He's a traitor. He does no good, Nick. He doesn't do good. Right, he's out to get you. And the more this said to him, the more he felt this. Now, why is Doeg doing this? Doeg's doing this because of the other part of his name, because he wishes he was David. He wishes he had David's place. So he undermines David. And because he undermines David, it's the lighter fuel. It's the fuel on the flames of Shaul's already unstable position, which continues going. So what's now Yonatan doing, says the Malbim? Yonatan is conveying a very clear message. If I realize that my father is in a no-return zone, he cannot get back from his hate of David, then you know what I'm going to tell you? I'm going to send you the symbolic message of the arrows. I'm going to show you that the arrows have reached too deep. Right? It's no longer retractable. I cannot change who my father is because there's somebody behind the scenes who has slandered you to the point where you can't get out. That's what it is. That's what he's communicating. Is that remarkable? It's so sad. It seems so petty, but it's so sad because just a few words here, just a few words there. It's David HaMelech's life. It's Yonatan's friend. It's Michal's husband. It's everything is falling apart here. Why? Because somebody doesn't like David. Because somebody just couldn't stand the fact that David went up faster than him. That's what the Midrash is telling us over here. Terrible. Last level, on one last level, and this is just to appreciate why he's doing this. This is the works of the Kedushas Levi. Anybody familiar who that is? Who's the Kedushas Levi? Very fascinating author. His name is Levi. That's a help. His name is Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. So Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev actually has a sefer called Kedushas Levi, which he writes in the Torah. But here's the exciting part. Is at the very end of the sefer, after he writes in the Torah, he has what's called Likutim. Little paragraphs. This is the one paragraph on our entire perek. In fact, this whole area of Shmuel. This is what he says in this one paragraph. Listen to his words. I was very, very fortunate to be able to find this today, Baruch Hashem. Here's what he says. V'lama also Yonatan im David, as in 63. Hasiman im achitzim. Halo be'emes l'soif ro'a ba'atzmo Yonatan im David. Right, as Leah was saying. He met him in the end. So what's the whole business with this? These arrows? He says, Hoyalo lamar hatshuva ba'al peh. She just told him orally. He quotes the Gemara in Pesachim, which we're going to touch on in a moment. The Gemara tells us, it talks about a person who's in Avelos, and when they were in Avelos, they turned the tear of their shirt behind them when meeting somebody you didn't know. Why? Why would they do that? A person's in Avelos, they turn the tear of their kriya so that it's facing the back. Why? Why would they do that? Why would they do that? They don't want the person to know. They don't want the person to think something is irregular that they've had Rachman and Yisrael and loss. So why is that? The Gemara explains why that is. It says the Gemara says because Moitzi Diba Huksil. It's a pasuk in Mishnah that a person who tells bad things is a fool. It's not the thing we should be doing is to convey bad news. We shouldn't be saying conveying bad news. Good news, let's do it all as fast as we can. But bad news is something we should try to avoid as much as possible. Sometimes it's necessary. If we don't tell the right people the right time, and it's certainly if it's family and close friends, it'll be devastating. But there's sometimes, you know, there's certain people, you know, like, they take great pride and joy in spreading terrible news, right? Many news agencies, sensationalist news agencies, that's where they get their money from. So the Gemara says you're not supposed to do that. So therefore, says, you know, just as a side note, Douglas Adams is a trilogy of five, for those of you familiar with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So in the beginning of the third one, he has a discussion called Mostly Harmless. He's a very unusual kind of fellow. So he basically, in the discussion, he says that nothing travels faster than the speed of light except for bad news. And he said they try to power rockets with bad news, but then nobody wanted them whenever they arrived. That was his comment. So what the Gemara is saying is you're not supposed to be that person. Try not to be the person to have to spread bad news. And therefore, says Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev from the period on the fourth last line, V'nimtza Yonatan hayo yorei shema yitztarech lemar ledavid besoira ro'a. He was worried. What's going to happen if my father's not willing to take him back in? I'm going to have to tell him that. He says, V'moitzi diba huksil. He doesn't want to be the one to relay the bad news. V'lakach also hasima kadei shelo yotzi diba takola mipiv. He didn't want to have to tell David. He didn't want to be able to break to David that he'll never ever have a full family again. He'll never ever be able to live with his wife and his father-in-law together. He'll never be able to come into the kingship in a respectable way where his father-in-law ushers him in. He'll have to wait for his father-in-law to die or he to be killed. He doesn't want to be the one to sit down in that news. So the way he conveys it, do you see what's going on here? This is just this is the brilliance of what, if we put this all together. On the one hand, Yonatan over here is conveying the damage of speech, right? By shooting these arrows, conveying the damage that was done by somebody else of speech. And in the same action, he is euphemistically conveying the bad news. Do you see that? He is euphemistic, expressing the lack of euphemism of somebody else at the same time. That's what's going on over here. That's why he had to use this method of communication. Fascinating, fascinating expression. Let's dig deeper because this is just remarkable. Euphemism now gets even deeper. Communication. We see the sensitivity of communication over here, but it gets even worse. Take a look at this. This to me is like one of the most remarkable sections in Tanakh. Let's jump straight back into the Pesukim for a quick moment. Where are we? Oh, here we are. Okay, so let's take a look. We're up to Pasuk Chof Gimel. Let's do Chof Dalad to Chof Tes. So we're going to do the next six Pesukim and try to appreciate this all together. Vayisaser David Basodeh. So David's hiding in the field, and now action is about to take place. Right, the cameras focus, and the scene starts. It's Rosh Chodesh. Right, Vayiba HaChodesh. It's Rosh Chodesh. Vayeshev Amelech El Alechem Nechol. The king's sitting down to his meal. Everybody's at the table. Fantastic. Vayeshev Amelech Al Moshevah Kafam Bafam El Moshevah Kiri. He's sitting by the wall in his regular spot. Vayokam Yonatan. Vayeshev Avner Mitzad Shaul. Vayipokeid Makom David. Yonatan's there. Avner is generals there, and David is not there. And obviously this is where all, you know, this is Lahavdil, this is the White House, you know, holiday party, you know what I'm saying? Every seat has got a special, you know, place mark, and, you know, and David's not, seat is empty. V'loi diber Shaul mu'uma bayamahu. Shaul didn't say anything on the first day. Ki omar mikrehu, bilti tahorhu, ki loi tahor. You know what, David must be impure. You know, so David HaMelech is probably not pure, right? Now that's why he's missing. But he explained it away. It was the second day of the Chodesh. And still, David's place is as empty as it was yesterday. So why is Ben Yishai not here right now? I heard he mentioned that he got a letter from home to Bethlehem, where he lives, to say that he should return for a meal. He says, I want to spend some family time. This is the time everybody gets together. This is the big meal. I'd like to spend time with my brothers. That's why I didn't come. Let's actually do a little further in this section. To Lama Dalad. Shaul goes into a huge rage on Yonatan. Benavas Hamardus, he says, you son of rebellion. Haloyodati ki vocheratol ben Yishai. I knew you were going to choose Ben Yishai over me. Levoshtachod, your nakedness, Levoshus ervasimechon, the nakedness of your mother. Ki chola yomimashe Ben Yishai ala dechayal demai. Every day that man lives, lotikon atol malchusecha, your kingship will never ever be established. You bring him right here now to me because he is liable for death. So Yonatan stands up, he digs in, he says, what did he do? Why is he guilty? And Shaul picks up the spear. We've seen the spear a few times. He raises the spear to hit his own son. And he realized the time is finished. He is going to kill David. And now Yonatan rises in anger, and he doesn't eat at the meal any bread, because he's so sad that David publicly ashamed David. Like everything blows up, you know, everything that we are trying to hold together. Yonatan was believing that his father could come back. This is it. This is the point of no return. Yonatan himself realizes that's what's happened. Now, there are a lot of things we got to think about over here. You know, there's a lot of food for thought. This response from Shaul seems way out. It seems very extreme, right? It's, you know, from 0 to 100. This seems like a very extreme response, and also, it seems also like very crude, right? It seems like he's shooting at Yonatan unfairly. He's embarrassing him, and he's embarrassing his mother. What's his mother got to do with it? Right? I mean to say, like, he's really digging into Yonatan here. What's going on? To really appreciate what's happening here, this is like just a shocking step in Tanakh. I'd like to just explore with you one short Gemara in Psachim. One short Gemara in Psachim. The Gemara says something which really will open up and shift everything that's going on. The conversation has a complete harmony to it, which we perhaps are not aware of. Take a look, this is in the source 65. The Gemara says the following in Psachim Daf Gimel. This is the area where the other Gemara was. Right, about not spreading bad news. That was on Daf Dalet at the next page. This is the previous page in Psachim. This general Gemara, in general, this area is about euphemism and talking nicely and pleasantly to people. So Gemara says the following. On the left is the translation. You see the embolded sections of the Sefaria translation directly, and the in-betweens are kind of explanations added. Okay? Now I'm just going to go to the Hebrew on the right-hand side for a second. He says, V'taladidon, my time aloika sani lele. The mission, the first mission in Psachim starts with the following mission. It says, Or la'aba arasar, on the light of the 14th, we check for chametz. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but the last time I checked for chametz, it was nighttime. And the way the mission describes it is, the light of the 14th is when we do it. Well, light and night sound the same, but or and lila don't sound the same, right? So that's not a mistake. So the Gemara is saying, well, why are they using the word light when you're trying to convey the word dark? So the Gemara answers, Lishnam alya hu, denokat. No, the Mishnah is using a euphemistic language. We don't want to talk about darkness, so we're going to mention the light, the dusk of that day. Okay. So there's an importance to convey euphemism. Now, it happens to be the euphemism is exactly the opposite of what it's saying, right? But that's how far we have to go. So the Gemara is going to give examples of where euphemism is an important educational technique. Examples. Could Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, by the way, we've seen him before already today, Dom Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, la'olam al yotzi adam davar megunemi piv. Person should never really say things which are crude, say things which are explicit. Right? Sharei, because the pasuk itself twists eight letters of the valuable Torah's letters not to say something disgusting. From the animal which is pure, an animal which is not pure. What's the euphemism over here? What has been changed in Parashas Noach when describing the two sets of animals which approach the Teva? So it could have just said Habehema HaTahara and Habehema HaTameah, right? But instead of saying the word Tameah impure, it says Asher Einenu Tahara. It adds, and the balance of letters is eight extra letters in the Torah for that. So you see from here, euphemism is a value. You don't always have to say it as it is. In fact, sometimes you should not say it as it is. As a footnote, by the way, just as an asterisk, if you go to Parshas Re'eh and Shmini, which are the two Parshas which talk about kosher and non-kosher animals, it talks about them as behemoth tameos. Why do you think that is? Well, there's times in life you have to be clear. The Torah is conveying, the Torah is not a one-slogan description. There's times to be euphemistic, and there's times where you need to be a little more direct so people understand. When it comes to kashrus, the Torah is pretty direct about it. When it comes to describing the animals that go on the table, why does the Torah need to be specific then? Asher enenu tahara, it's not pure. So we see that the Torah is willing to sacrifice space and letters in order to convey an idea in a more pleasant way. That's what we're learning from here. The Gemara goes on. Now this relates to us. Rav Papa, who's later the Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi in the Amoraim, says, Teisha, there was nine letters which were lost. Because it says that a man, will be impure, has a seminal emission, so it describes him as not being pure. So there, if you do the balance of letters over there, there's nine letters, not just four, eight letters like in Noah. Okay, good. So we see an even more extreme version of it. And now the Gemara has the final, we'll call it, this is the slam dunk examples over here of what it is. Here we are. Ravina Omar Eser. Skipping to the next one. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Omar Sheish Esrei 16. Shneemar ki Omar Mikre hu Bilti Tahor hu Kiloi Tahor. Because he said, you know, maybe he's not pure because it was a happening. Remaining to say that he became impure because he's not pure. Who's speaking? This is Shaul HaMelech. This is Shaul HaMelech on day one at the feast, looking at David's empty seat. And what does he say to himself? He says, maybe he's not pure. Now, let's just think about this for a second. The Torah is describing the way God spoke to Noach. And when he speaks to Noach, Hashem subtly changes the way he speaks in order to euphemistically convey the idea to Noah, and he is prepared to use more letters which are going to be etched down for posterity, right? Is Shaul HaMelech speaking in this pasuk? He's not speaking. What's he doing? He's thinking. Meaning to say, not only is he going out of his way more than Hashem himself is described in Parashas Noach, he's not even articulating it. He's thinking, and he's thinking euphemistically. That's how far it goes, says the Gemara, of being careful with one's language. Wow, right? That's how far it goes. Now, we're in a position to ask the question even worse. If that's true, this should be like a red flashing light as we read through the section, that Shaul HaMelech is not the kind of person who shoots from the hip, who says what he wants because he can't control his emotional responses to things, right? He's the kind of person who even thinks in euphemistic terms, more than even in Parashas Noach. So what's going on over here? What is going on? Do you see this? It's almost like Tanakh is giving us this moment to realize that Shaul has a very calculated and specific response. So here's how it goes. One of my teachers, who was a tremendous, tremendous Tanakh teacher, was a person by the name of Rav Avron Rivlin, who was the Mashkech of Keren B'Yavne. And he said the following thing, which is just very fascinating on this area. He says that, look, let's understand the dynamics over here. Shaul HaMelech is the king. Shaul HaMelech's next in line is his oldest son, Yonatan. Yonatan is now shifting allegiances because he's now defending David publicly in front of him. Why David has the right to go home without a specific request. He didn't have any slips handing in, signed by anybody, right? Yonatan is fully backing him up. And so what Shaul HaMelech is saying, a very simple thing. Yonatan, not only are you not going to get kingship when you support him, but think of what you're saying about yourself. Everybody's looking at you. You know, like, who just got engaged yesterday? Prince Harry, I'm sorry, you know. He's five steps away and they're still putting him on the front page, right? Think about that, you know? Like, everything the prince does, Yonatan, you're the crown prince. You're the next in line, right? And everybody's watching your every action. You're on the front tabloid of every paper. And what do they see? They see a picture of you walking after David HaMelech and holding, you know, and giving your royal clothes to him and supporting him publicly. And this is going to be on the next Twitter feed that everybody's going to be reading. This is what they're seeing. You know what they say to themselves? They say, why would Yonatan be supporting David? Why would Yonatan not be claiming, like every good, you know, testosterone-filled, you know, egotistical king who's trying to get power by killing however many other people they can possibly kill to get into? Why is Yonatan not just taking what's going to duly land in his lap if he just keeps quiet and waits? You know what it must be, people are going to say? The op-eds are going to start being written. You're not going to start saying, so maybe Yonatan isn't Shaul's son. Maybe the reason why he doesn't support David himself as being the king is because he knows deep down that really, maybe he isn't legitimate himself. See what Shaul's saying? Yonatan, you're jeopardizing not just your political career, you're jeopardizing your legitimacy by supporting David HaMelech. Levoy Shtecha, your nakedness and the nakedness of your mother. He's saying, you're jeopardizing everything you are by supporting David. Don't think that the public's going to be understanding of who you are. They're going to tar and feather you, Yonatan, to the point that you have no space left. Shaul is so mad. Why Shaul can't forgive David Yeshua Yonatan is because Yonatan, you're destroying yourself and me by doing this. That's what Shaul is saying to him. This is not Shaul getting mad for no reason. He understands what's is going to be viewed over here. He understands where this is going. That's the critical moment over here where what Shaul's trying to convey. And this is what I think the Gemara is also trying to point out to us is that Shaul knows when to think euphemistically, but he knows when to be explicit about where he thinks that his son is going over the edges. This is the depth of it. Very, very sad, sad, sad point. I want to see just if we have a moment, if we have any moments to do anything more, maybe we should just hold it here for a second. You know what? let's just see if we can just raise it in the parak, just for the psukim, and next week we'll do is we'll take more of a bigger picture eon. Just very, very briefly then. From Pasuk Lamed Hei to Mem Beis, the next eight psukim. Vayi baboker, it's in the morning. Vayetze Yehonatan, vasadeh lamo'ed David. He goes to meet up David. V'nar kotoni mo, and he has this young man with him. Vayomer naroi rutz nutzono es achitzim asher onachim oreh hanaratz v'yorah chetzi el avira. So he shoots the arrow to make sure the arrow goes beyond the young man. The lad comes running up to where the arrow is. He says, "Vayikra Yonatan acharei hanar vayomer halaya chetzi mimchava hala." He says, "No, sorry, the arrow is beyond you." Vayikra Yonatan acharei hanar mehera chushan al tamod. Don't dally. Get the arrow. Vayalaket no yonar Yonatan esachitzim vayavoy adonov. So he brings back the arrows and he returns to his master. Vayanar lo yadam uma. Ach Yonatan veDavid yadu es adavar. Only David and Yonatan understood this. And if we go back to the Kedusha Slavia for a second, meaning to say, they understood what didn't need to be said anymore. Right? David has got the message. So he says, take this all back to the city, take the armor, take the bow, take the arrows, take it all back to the city. Hanar ba, the lad leaves, David bows down three times to Yonatan. Why does David need to bow to Yonatan? Well, yes, because he's next in line, but also remember, at this point in time, who wields power now? Yonatan, at this point in time, could have easily turned him in. Okay, so remember, and this is now Yonatan fulfilling his section of the covenant, which is to protect David, right? So he bows down to him in deference to not to seeking him out. They cry on each other's shoulders until David's crying gets too loud. Don't cry too loud, people are going to hear you. And we remember that we swore between the two of us, saying, Hashem will be between our children and children's children forever in peace. And they leave each other. Why are they crying? They're probably not going to see each other ever again. But more than that, if you think about this, from Yonatan's perspective, Yonatan's never going to have a whole family again. He's never going to be able to have his best friend and his brother-in-law, essentially, and his father at the same table. David's never going to be able to see his wife and his father-in-law at the same time. He's never going to be able to spend with his best friend. The family is, from now on inwards, broken. Mm-hmm. And that realization, although unstated, is something which is sinking in now. And that's the weeping that they have on each other's shoulders. What I want to do is just leave as a question over here, and that is that... It isn't a inconsequential detail, meaning double negative. It is of consequence that this is all happening on Rosh Chodesh. And the question we have to try to start with next time is, why is Rosh Chodesh the framework in time for this whole episode, where the family starts pulling apart at the edges? That's the question we have to deal with. So Metz Hashem next week, and all who are welcome to join us. We're starting next door, the next section of the history.